You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. An amazing day. Last night, the Republicans are really showing their stripes. These Republican debates are very much telling us what the conservative mindset and the Republican Party, which is increasingly white and paranoid, is all about. And for example, last night, Juan Williams, just came right out and said to Newt Gingrich, "Do you realize how offensive this is to African Americans? What you're saying, that poor kids in poor schools should be janitors in those schools?" Here it is.
"Speaker Gingrich, you recently said black Americans should demand jobs, not food stamps. You also said poor kids lack a strong work ethic and proposed having them work as janitors in their schools. Can't you see that this is viewed at a minimum as insulting to all Americans, but particularly to black Americans?"
"No, I don't see that."
You get that? He says, "No, I don't see that." And he gets a standing ovation virtually for this. This is the audience. Similarly, Rick Perry and Fox anchor Bret Baier, this whole "be afraid of brown people" meme. Here's that interaction.
"Governor Perry, since the Islamist-oriented party took over in Turkey, the murder rate of women has increased 1,400% there. Press freedom has declined to the level of Russia. The prime minister of Turkey has embraced Hamas, and Turkey has threatened military force against both Israel and Cyprus. Given Turkey's turn, do you believe Turkey still belongs in NATO?"
"Well, obviously, when you have a country that is being ruled by what many would perceive to be Islamic terrorists, when you start seeing that type of activity against their own citizens, then yes, not only is it time for us to have a conversation about whether or not they belong to be in NATO, but it's time for the United States, when we look at their foreign aid, to go to zero with it."
Yeah, so we all discovered Turkey's run by terrorists, Islamic terrorists. Oh, my God. Brown people, we can't have that. And this is, in fact, to bring it home, the state of Arizona is now added again, this time banning books. The Tucson Unified School District just released a list of books that have been officially banned from the classroom as part of the school district's effort to dump its 13-year-old ethnic studies program. Jeff Biggers is on the line with us. He's a journalist, investigative journalist, author of several books, most recently Reckoning at Eagle Creek, The Secret Legacy of Coal in the Heartland. Jeff Biggers, BIGGERS.com is his website. And Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back on, Tom.
Tell me, my understanding is that what they are saying to this, to the teachers in this 60% Hispanic school district, is that any book reflecting the heritage of these kids that specifically references directly or indirectly race, ethnicity, or oppression as a central theme has to be cut out of the school's curriculum. And the schools can be hit with a multi-million dollar fine if they don't comply. Do I have that right?
You have it right. And I think the air of confusion that you have is shared by everybody in Tucson and Arizona as well. You know, this law basically was passed about a year ago, and it's taken about a year to sort it out. And the law was a strange law. It was concocted by the former superintendent of public education, the current attorney general, Tom Horn, who singled out Mexican-American studies there in Tucson, one single program. They passed a law through this Tea Party-held legislature to crack down on one school program that teaches ethnic studies and Mexican-American studies. And, of course, this is in a school district that is not only 60% Latino, but it's a school district that was founded by Mexican-Americans, and we're getting ready to have our 140th anniversary of the actual founding, and they actually can't even read about their founders who actually brought public education to Arizona and Tucson. So it's a very troubling issue. And
so,
specifically, there's the official list of banned books, and then there is this mandate to stay away from any units, as you say, that deal with race, ethnicity, and oppression as central themes.
Which includes a work by Shakespeare?
Which includes The Tempest, Woe to Caliban, of course. And I posted an interview this morning with a Tucson High School literature teacher named Curtis Acosta, who's been nationally acclaimed for his work of dealing with kids. You know, once again, Tom, I think your listeners have to recognize this is a program that has a 5 to 11% greater graduation rate and higher test scores than any other program in the city. You know, we're dealing with an area of poor communities where typically there's a 50% dropout rate. And the kids who've gone through this Mexican-American Studies program typically have an 88 to 93% graduation rate.
Wow.
And Mr. Acosta has been in the forefront of using literature from not just Mexican-Americans, but an incredibly diverse group to galvanize and bring kids back into the school and to really foster them on a college-bound program. And part of that is to use The Tempest. And as he did an interview this morning, he showed how his administrators came to him on Wednesday and said, hey, we're sorry, we're confused as well, but you simply can't use that text because you're using it in a way. It's not simply Shakespeare himself, but how you teach. You can't right. teach kids about oppression.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I confess, I have not read The Tempest or seen it played. I've read, you know, several of Shakespeare's plays. That's not one of them. In a sentence or two, could you summarize it?
Sure. You know, this is a great play that a lot of them consider it to be the last play by Shakespeare and Prospero. Of course, it's the issue when we finally have discovered the New World, and he bases it on an island. And then, of course, there's all sorts of love and denial and conflict. But it's really this character of Caliban, this new American, this new person that Shakespeare and, of course, the New World was trying to understand, and their role and dynamic and the role of language and the role of oppression. And so it's an incredible, prescient look at what's going to be happening and unfolding. You know, here we are, 400 years later.
Right. Yeah, remarkable. Now, so first we had the Papers, Please law, and now the great historical rewrite. It seems that officials in Arizona are doing their best to make Hispanic Americans feel unwelcome in their own homes, their own community, and frankly, their own historic homeland. And on top of that, we have the Arizona State Superintendent of Public Instruction, John Huppenthal, who campaigned in 2010 on a promise to, quote, stop La Raza. And he said he was going to base his own school principles for children on corporate management schemes that he'd learned from the Fortune 500. Do I have that right? I'm speechless. I mean, this sounds insane to me. We have a minute left here.
Yours. Huppenthal is one of these Tea Party politicians who snuck in as state superintendent. He did run on a campaign to stop La Raza, which really means to stop Mexicans.
Right.
And I think that's what's shaking people up. I think in this last few seconds, though, what is most troubling, Tom, is that Democrats and progressives are really having a slow time to speak out on this issue. As of yet, you know, I broke the story on Friday, in no local media outside of an incredible blogger there in Tucson has actually touched this issue, this book ban,
wow.
this incredible crackdown. And I think that's what's disturbing a lot of us is, you know, where are the Democrats? The Tucson Unified School District Board, in fact, is led by a Democrat who's led this crackdown.
Well, not just the Democrats. Where are the Americans?
Where are the Americans? And it should be.
I mean, these are American principles. We're a nation of immigrants. Come on.
Exactly. It's really one of the most troubling issues I think we're going to have, and I think it's great that you're touching on it now. It's really going to be unfolding, I think, into really a major national story over the course of the next week. That simply, I think, Arizona has no idea what they've unleashed with this new law.
It's amazing. The article, Who's Afraid of the Tempest, Jeff Biggers wrote it. You can see it over at jeffbiggers.com. Do I have that right, Jeff?
Yep.
Okay. Jeff, J-E-F-F, Biggers, B-I-G-G-E-R-S.com. Check it out. And, of course, all of his other previous books, most recently Reckoning in Eagle Creek. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom. Take care.
Good speaking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is book banning ever, ever okay? And more on the Republican debate coming up. Stick around. Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program, and this is just amazing, and it's what we're seeing. You know, this whole concept that America is a Christian nation, that it's an Anglo-Saxon nation, that it's a white nation, has been kind of an article of faith in the Republican Party, certainly since the mid-1800s, I would say. I mean, keep in mind, the Republican Party was basically invented in the 1850s as a reform party. And by the 1870s was captured by the railroads. It became corrupted and became basically the party of the big railroads and then the steel barons and the oil barons. And it's been the party of big business ever since. And as such, it's also been the party of basically rich white people. And over and over again, we see this. And Mitt Romney, for example, was pressed to release his tax returns last night. In fact, it was, this is clip number three, Jacob. This is Rick Perry saying to Mitt Romney, hey, we'd like to know how you're making your money, buddy.
My income tax have been out every year. And, Newt, I think you're going to let your income tax come out Thursday. And Mitt, we need for you to release your income tax so the people of this country can see how you made your money.
And now here is the most waffling, weaselly, extraordinary. This is the soundbite of the night, other than Newt Gingrich saying, you know, when Juan Williams said, don't you realize that this is insulting to people of color? And Newt said, no, I don't see that. You know, well, yeah, okay. Beyond that, this, I think, is one of the most extraordinary moments of the night. Mitt Romney talking about, I'll release my tax returns. Well, no, I won't. Not before this primary is over. Maybe after I'm elected as the guy who's running. Well, maybe not. Maybe not even then. We'll see. It'll be in April. Maybe it won't be in April. Just take a listen.
Governor Romney, Speaker Gingrich, Senator Santorum, and now vocally tonight, Governor Perry, are calling for you to release your tax records. The Obama campaign is asking for the same thing. Governor, will you release your income tax records?
You know, I looked at what has been done in campaigns in the past with Senator McCain and President George W. Bush and others. They've tended to release tax records in April or tax season. I hadn't planned on releasing tax records because the law requires us to release all of our assets, all the things we own. That I've already released. It's a pretty full disclosure.
Jacob, can you pause that right there? Let me just interject. He's mentioning the fact that John McCain and George W. Bush released their tax records in April. What he's not mentioning is that they release them every April because that's when you turn in your tax returns to the government. And they just send a copy to the press. And they'd been doing it for years. And so he says, I haven't done this in years. Nobody has any idea how I make my money, and I don't intend to. But maybe I'll think about it in April. Back to the clip.
I hadn't planned on releasing tax records because the law requires us to release all of our assets, all the things we own. That I've already released. It's a pretty full disclosure. But if that's been the tradition, and I'm not opposed to doing that, time will tell. But I anticipate that most likely I'm going to get asked to do that around the April time period, and I'll keep that open.
Governor, you will plan then to release your income tax records around April.
I think I've heard enough from folks saying, look, you know, let's see your tax records. I have nothing in them that suggests there's any problem, and I'm happy to do so. I sort of feel like we're showing a lot of exposure at this point. And if I become our nominee, and what's happened in history is people have released them in about April of the coming year, and that's probably what I do.
Yeah. Why not release last April's? And in fact, last April you were running for president. Why didn't you release them then? You know, Mitt Romney's been running for president for 10 years. He's never released his tax. He could have done it every April. Anyway, I just thought that, you know, talk about a weasel. Anyway, Ray in North Troy, Vermont. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I'm telling you, this is incredible. You know, what is this country coming to? You've got me by a couple years on your age, but I can remember as a kid at 12, 10, grabbing a snow shovel, going out, earning $5, shoveling a couple driveways. I've got older siblings. I'm the youngest out of six, like the Brady Bunch, three boys, three girls. This putting kids to work in our schools is an insane thought process. Yeah. This man obviously is colorblind. Doesn't realize what America is really about anymore. They're just totally out of touch.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Ray. And nobody is suggesting that, you know, you were shoveling snow when you were 6 years old, 7 years old. I had a newspaper route, actually. Grit was the newspaper when I was probably 7 or 8. And, you know, you make 5 cents on a paper and you sell them in the neighborhood, and it was weekly. And my friend Terry was selling eggs, actually. He would go door to door selling fresh eggs. You know, we all did that. I mean, we lived in a kind of a, I don't want to call it lower middle class, because I don't know what to call it. I mean, we were not up to the standards, whatever. You know, we were getting by, and as a little kid, I thought life was great. You know, it wasn't until I was much older that I looked back and said, wow, we had 6 people living in a 3-bedroom house. How did we do that? But in any case, you know, me and my 4 brothers and my dad and mom. But in any case, nobody's suggesting that kids shouldn't be able to earn a little extra money. But telling poor children that they have to wash the toilets in the school, that a job that's not being done by their rich peers, I mean, come on, this is bizarre. Lee in Forestville. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Well, Tom, I appreciate your show and all you do.
Oh, Lee, I'm sorry, I missed the time cue. Can I bring you back when we come back from the break?
Sure.
Okay, just hang on there, Lee, and you'll be our next call. I'm very sorry. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program here. We'll be back with more. We're going to get Lee's comment here. We'll get some others of your comments. And I also have to tell you about this fight against indefinite detention, what Chris Hedges, he's suing the president. What's going on with this?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And a new Washington Post ABC poll shows what most Americans think of Congress. It's a surprise, and it's not a surprise. Interesting stuff there, too. Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us. Speaking as a paperback writer, I'm pretty horrified by what's going on in Tucson. Let me pick up Lee's call here because I had put him on the air, and then I see Tom and Tempe wants to get in on the Tucson law against the Tempest. We'll get to that. Lee in Forestville, what's up?
I was wondering, since I missed the debate last night, if anybody discussed the impending war with Iran and all the troop movements that are going on over in that part of the country and what you think about it.
You know, I watched the whole thing, and I mean, there were a few occasions where I left the room and I might have missed something, but I don't recall anything about that, and I haven't seen anything in the news reports today, so I think they avoided that topically. So, but we know that the one thing that we do know is that the neocons are pushing really, really hard to start a war with Iran. It's, you know, they want that, and they want it bad. Thanks a lot for the call, Lee. Tom in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
On the issue of the Tucson School District, I thought it might be useful to actually look at what the law says as a starting point.
Yes, sir.
It's fairly short. It just says any courses or classes which include any of the following, and there's just 4 simple things. If they include promoting the overthrow of the U.S. government, or if the class promotes resentment towards a race or class of people, or if the course is designed primarily for pupils of a particular ethnic group, and the last thing is if the course is advocating ethnic solidarity instead of the treatment of pupils as individuals. Now, that's the only thing the law has in it. The law doesn't ban any books. The fact that the Tucson district, in order to, you know, get out from under the fact that they were found in violation of this, the district has taken it upon itself to ban books within the district. Mm-hmm. And even the fellow, I think his name was Sota, who had one of these classes, when you listen to completely what he says, it's not that the book itself was found to be a problem. What was found to be a problem in his class was the way the book was being taught. It wasn't the book per se. There's no reason that the Tucson district couldn't continue to use the Tempest in a literature class. The problem they have with using the book was that they were using the book in a way that violated one of these 4 things that the law says shouldn't be violated.
Yeah. In other words, they're talking about the fact that there has been oppression of some of the people in that classroom or their relatives. God forbid.
If they use the book as a way to say, see how you folks are being oppressed the same way
or have been oppressed.
Or he was oppressed. And I think if you look at the things, probably the third item on that list of things has been one of the areas that they've had trouble with, a class that's designed primarily for pupils of a particular ethnic group.
Yeah.
There was a story out when this thing was in the headlines a year or so ago that these classes were being designed and, you might say, marketed in the school district as being specifically designed for a particular ethnic group, and as you can imagine, the group they were designed
for. Let me ask you a question, Tom. When you or I'm assuming you're a white guy.
That'd be a correct assumption.
Okay. When you or I study the history of the kings of England and the French Revolution and the Dutch Low Colonies, the early democracies in the 14th century, or any of that kind of stuff, which is the history of the Caucasians who took over this continent. Do you really think that somebody who doesn't share that history at all, but who came from Mexico and is of, for example, Aztec or Mayan origin, or who is forcibly brought here from Africa, doesn't get it that what is routinely taught is the history of white European culture and that their culture is being ignored? What on earth is wrong with saying, okay, this is, you know, we all get it that the history that's being taught is white history, and so we're going to just be clear about it. Here's the history of what's happened to brown people. Here's the history of what's happened to black people. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, and that's not what was taken.
That's what the law says, is that there is something wrong with that.
No, that's not what this law says.
If it says you can't identify a particular, you can't identify a curriculum for particular people of a particular race, then that's absolutely what it's saying. What it's saying is this is the velvet glove over the iron fist of a dominator and racist culture. What it is saying is it's okay to teach history in quotes as if it's the only history, which is basically white Caucasian history. But if you're going to teach the history of the oppression of people of color or people who of Hispanic origin or anybody else, or for that matter, you know, whoever were the oppressed people in The Tempest, as I said, I haven't read that work by Shakespeare, then characterize it as here's an example of oppression, then you can't do that. And I think I just think that's wrong. And I think, Tom, what it shows is how ignorant, and I use that word not as a slap to you or me, hopefully, but just as a genuine, for lack of a better word, how ignorant most Caucasians in America are of how Eurocentric our culture is, our schools are, our history is, and how marginalized people who don't share that particular DNA, who weren't born in the Lucky Sperm Club, feel about it. And the fact that this kind of education, teaching to these kids and saying, okay, you have, you know, historically, you have been the victim of oppression, and we're just going to call it out and say what it is, that these kids are having an 80 and 90% high school graduation rate when the schools where the Latino kids are forced to study, quote, history, which is basically white history, are having a 50% dropout rate. You know, I think it's really important for people to know the history of their people.
They weren't being forced to study white history. That was another aspect of this.
Yes, they are, because it's not called white history. In our schools, we call white history history.
That's not correct. When you look at what was going on in the school district, the way they had structured the required courses, you could graduate from the Tucson School District and satisfy all requirements and never take a course in civics and never take a course in American history. You could take these courses that were nothing except the things designed to only talk about Hispanic history, and you could graduate having never taken a course in either civics or American history.
Well, we should have a discussion about that. I mean, that's wrong, too. We should be learning about all the cultures. But the thing that is missing in America right now, and it has been throughout my lifetime, and I'm guessing it has been in the history of education, is the fact that our education is Eurocentric. Now, granted, our nation was founded by European immigrants to this country who basically rob, raped, and pillaged their way across the country and you know, took the land from the Indians and from the Native Americans and et cetera. But nonetheless, the nation being founded by those people, it would be, in my mind, you could also argue that our nation was founded by Africans who were brought here involuntarily from Africa, under horrific conditions with a 20 to 50% mortality rate in slave ships, and who built this country. I mean, I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. I'm 2.5 blocks from the Capitol building, and every single piece of wood, concrete, brick, or marble in that building was put into place by African slaves. By African American slaves. And that's not taught in American history. In fact, that's true of virtually every building in this city.
Everything you just discussed could be taught in a class in Tucson, as long as the class was designed to include all aspects of history, not just Mexican history, not just white history, not just
then what we've discovered, Tom, if what you're saying is true. Then what we've discovered is a really interesting edge and a marvelous opportunity for people both in Tucson and in Arizona and all across the United States to have a conversation, a genuine conversation about how, as America becomes a multicultural society, as Pat Buchanan gets fired from MSNBC because he's writing a book in which it has titles, you know, chapters titled The Death of White America, The Death of Christian America. It's not the death. It's what we're seeing is that we have always been a multicultural society. It's just that all except one culture have historically been oppressed in this society, and now we're seeing a multicultural society where we're saying, let's bring everybody together. What we've discovered here is an edge for conversation, an opportunity to have a larger conversation about the role of history in the United States. Why is it that people, you know, this is the argument, you know, that started being made in the 1960s when people were saying that the SAT tests were racist. And white Caucasians, white people, European ancestry people were saying, what are you talking about? Well, all the history questions on the test were about Caucasians, for example, and expressions or jargon or whatever was classically European jargon. And so that got largely marginalized and dismissed and ridiculed as racist and whatnot. And we really haven't had that conversation again. And I think it's time for us to have it.
Absolutely. And I think if people went and actually looked at the syllabus for the classes that were being taught in Tucson, they'd see why it got in trouble with these four parameters that were outlined in the law. And this law didn't come about because somebody just woke up one day and said, you know, we got to stop this. They talked to the Tucson district for years.
Yeah, and then this law also came out of the same legislature that brought us your papers, please, legislation. So I'm a little skeptical about it. But, Tom, thank you for the call. And good conversation. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's really extraordinary how subtle bias is and how pervasive it is, you know? Let's get into that a little more.
See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Yeah, except Julio can't learn about Julio's ancestors. You know, I can learn about mine. I can learn all about the history of Europe, but Julio, no, he wants to learn about what's going on with his people, and no. Ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen at all. Charles in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Yeah, it's important to know the ethnic history. As a matter of fact, we all need to know about our history.
Yep.
And be able to share that with our fellow Americans. Like myself, I didn't know anything about the black soldiers that fought in the Civil War or about the Tuskegee Airmen until after I graduated from college.
Wow.
And so yesterday I had a chance to actually meet some of the Tuskegee Airmen here at the Martin Luther King Parade in Los Angeles, and looking forward to seeing that movie Red Tails coming out this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. People without a history is a people bereft. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it. Is lost might be the right word. that that we have to have our roots. We have to have a sense of who we are and where we came from. And,
exactly. And
go ahead.
And you know, racism, that's just based on ignorance. So if we did a better job of teaching our history, you know, the good as well as the bad, I think people would you see a lot less racism. I'll just give you one example. There's a man named Jesse Russell. Now, Jesse Russell came up with a digital cell phone technology. Without him, there wouldn't have been an iPhone.
Right.
He had the big old cellular phones.
Yeah.
He came up with the digital technology. You can find his name, read up on the internet. But just something like that, if that was taught in the school.
And he was African American.
That would make a difference.
Is that your point?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of contributions that African Americans and Hispanics and Asians and Native Americans have made to this country. And yet, generally, they're not acknowledged. And when people are acknowledged like that, the assumption is that they were white people just because, hey, it's just a name on paper. And the result of that is that kids who are minorities go to school and they study, quote, history, quote, civics, things like that, or even the history of science and things like that. And they get the impression that it was all done by white people. And it wasn't all done by white people. And in fact, in many cases, the stuff that didn't get done by people of color didn't get done because the white people were busy keeping them, quote, in their place, end quote. And that's the horror of it all. And Charles, thank you very much for the call and for what you said. And in fact, let me just add to that. There was just this remarkable thing. This from the Rick Santorum campaign. One of his staffers pointed out they were talking about, you know, why did Michelle Bachmann not make it on the Republican side? And this is a Republican staffer. This is a guy on Rick Santorum's staff. And his name is Jamie Johnson. He's the Santorum's Iowa's coalition director. He sent out an email saying that children's lives would be harmed if we had a woman as president of the United States. Now, this goes, you know, this isn't race, this is gender, but it's the same thing. In as much as it's been basically, you know, white males dominating the world. And not females. And he says, children's lives would be harmed if the nation had a female president, or that's what he's suggesting, his exact quote. The question then comes, is it God's highest desire, that is, his biblically expressed will, to have a woman rule the institutions of the family, the church, and the state? And clearly the implicit answer is no. And I just find it mind-boggling, you know? Emmanuel in Farmington, New Mexico. Hey, Emmanuel, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I am here in New Mexico, and I grew up in New Mexico in a lot of poor Hispanic communities, and I've been watching this morning's debate on the educational issues in Tucson, Arizona, and I just sort of wanted to make a comment on that that's actually related to the content of a book I'm writing right now.
Okay.
And, you know, my perspective is that, you know, the importance of transparency in education, when we look at history, and you know, more specifically, some of the unpleasant parts of history and some of the atrocities that have happened, and when we really, the only way that we can really hope to develop a better society and a more well-rounded collective awareness is through really looking at these things and not sticking our head in the sand in any way in some attempt to basically, you know, see things as different than they were.
Yeah.
You know,
I absolutely agree. And that's why I wanted to open this show with that topic and take that piece out of the Republican debate and talk about what's going on in Tucson. And I think you put your finger on it, Emmanuel. We do need to be talking about it. And thank you for the call. We do need to be talking about it. We do need to be highlighting these issues. And we do need to be going. Basically, we need to acknowledge that America, you know, the Republicans love to talk about American exceptionalism. What's exceptional about us is that we're a nation founded not on DNA. You know, in Sweden, what makes you a Swede is that your ancestors were Swedish. What makes us exceptional is that we were founded on an idea, which is that all men and women are created equal. John in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, John, what's up?
Good morning. Tom, great to listen to your show.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a recovering Republican. I've got 8 years of critical thinking behind me. I just wanted to mention how I look back at my history. I was in junior high and high school during the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. and how the school system, which was relatively independent back then, indoctrinated me into a nationalistic mindset that you know, Jane Fonda was a communist, Martin Luther King was a communist, Nelson Mandela was a communist. Everything that really stood for the rights of the average person was a communist.
Right, and you need to be afraid of communists.
Yeah, that was the fear tactic then. Now it's terrorists, you know. I don't know what it was before communists. I guess it was, you know, the Germans or the Nazis, I suppose, and maybe that was more of a real threat. But there's been always a government-sponsored threat to our freedom, quote-unquote freedom.
Yeah, well, it used to be the South or the North.
Yeah, if you go back further, exactly.
Yeah.
And I look back at my own history and my own life, and I see that how intensely I was indoctrinated into a nationalistic mindset where fighting for freedom was patriotic. No one questioned why you were doing it, what was the purpose.
Yeah.
No one questioned the value of humanity and that there are brothers and sisters all around the world. It was this United States is God's country.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're fighting for freedom and we're bringing democracy to the world.
No, I'm with you, John. And that was the teaching. And that's the thing that, interestingly enough, Ron Paul, of all people, brings to the Republican debates is to puncture that balloon. Thank you, John.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, last night, one of the topics that came up again was, in fact, it was a giant crowd pleaser, was Newt Gingrich talking about how important it was that poor children be selected out and allowed to work in their schools. Now, this is one piece of a much larger issue for conservatives and Republicans, which is specifically that, you know, if you're Mitt Romney and you're born with millions of dollars and you make your living moving money around, basically investing in companies, buying companies, stripping them down, selling them off, things like that, that you pay a maximum 15% income tax rate. In fact, as best we can tell, Mitt is paying around 14%. And because we have a capitalist gains tax rate in the United States for income tax of maximum 15%, and then a labor tax rate in the United States, which is a maximum of 36%. So first of all, you get this incredible tax break because of the capitalist gain tax system. But secondly, labor have rights, have unions, organize. A $10 million campaign is being kicked off, funded by, we don't know, to say, you know, union people are bad people. Mark Williams on the line with us, conservative radio talk show host and former chair of the Tea Party Express, marktalk.com, his website. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. Why do you hate democracy in the workplace?
In fact, I support democracy in the workplace. I support my rights.
So you support
and
unions.
My co-workers' rights to choose whether or not we belong to a union. It's that simple. There should be
so you're in favor of card check.
Me and my boss. Pardon me?
So you're in favor of card check, the Employee Free Choice Act.
Oh, I'm in favor of the democratic process in the workplace. If I and my co-workers decide to belong to a union, we absolutely have that right. What we don't have is the right to tell someone who doesn't wish to belong to our union that we don't have the right to compel them to belong to that union or compel a payment in lieu of membership.
I thought you believed in democracy in the workplace.
I do.
So isn't democracy majority rules?
Pure democracy is majority rules.
Okay, so if more than 50% of the people in the workplace say we're going to create a union and we're all going to chip into it because, by the way, we're all going to benefit from it, and you're a member of that workplace and you say, you know, I really don't want to be a member of that union. Sorry, Mark, you still have lots and lots of freedom. You can choose to work someplace else, or you can be a member of this union because we have democracy here in this workplace.
What you're actually talking about is a mob rule, where the majority can decide whether or not you have any rights whatsoever. and you have no say over that except to maybe protest. That's why this country doesn't have a pure democracy. That's that there were times in this country's history when entire classes of people were considered.
So let me get this right. Originally you were saying you're in favor of democracy in the workplace. Now it's not 51% democracy. So what percentage of people in the workplace do you think have to say, yes, I want to be a member of a union before everybody has to pay into that union so it can be functional and actually represent everybody in the workplace? Is it 53%, 59%, 60%, 80%?
Anybody in a union should have the option of being in that union or not. It doesn't matter.
So you think that it has to be
100%? People in the building say you should be.
So you don't believe in democracy in the workplace. You believe in absolute uniform and unanimity in the workplace, that absolutely everybody has to salute the yes or no to the union, or else there's no union. Do I have that right?
No, I don't believe in that. I don't believe that anybody should be compelled to join any organization that they don't wish to join.
You always have a choice of quitting your job, Mark.
If that organization, great.
You always have the choice of quitting your job if you don't like working in a union shop.
Yeah, but you also have your choice. If you have a supermarket that doesn't like the way you look and doesn't allow you in because the majority of customers don't like it, you can always go find food someplace else or grow your own. This country is based on protecting the right of the individual. And one of the most basic rights we have is the right to go out and earn a living and feed our families. And nobody can stand between us and that right. And it's the job of the government to make sure that doesn't happen.
Did you just try to conflate?
The majority of the workplace decides that they don't want the black guy in there.
Did you just try to conflate civil rights laws with your anti-union stance?
It's not anti-union stance. I'm a union member. I am not anti-union.
You and I are both union. I'm assuming you're also a member of AFTER like I am.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
One sucking vampires who have never done a damn thing for me in 30 years.
Well, you should talk to some of the guys who have been around AFTER for a while, because there's a lot of people who are getting health insurance through AFTER. There's a lot of people who are retired with AFTER, with pensions from AFTER.
Standing by while radio people are being slaughtered left and right by the corporate bosses.
Exactly, because there has been a 30-year... There has been a 30-year... So here you are now complaining that the union, that AFTER is not stronger, when there has been a 30-year Republican war on unions, and particularly in the radio marketplace, much of that war has been led by a company that Mitt Romney once owned and started.
Yes, exactly. You're not going to find me supporting Mitt Romney on that alone. But the idea here is that a majority of people cannot all get together and say that the black guy over there doesn't belong here, or that woman can't work here, or this white guy can't work here.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about the right to unionize. We're not talking about the right to discriminate. You're trying to conflate the what used to be considered in the United States the right to discriminate and has been blown out of the water, and we both agree was reprehensible. You're trying to conflate that with the right to unionize. It's like trying to mix apples and Volkswagens.
How about the right to not unionize? How about the right to just go to work, earn a living, and not have to pay a third party for the privilege?
You absolutely have that right. You can work anywhere you want.
No, you don't have that right.
You sure do. Come on, this is America. If you can get a job someplace, you can go to work there.
You do not have the right. You either pay the union dues in lieu of membership, or you pay the union dues and get the membership.
Mark, am I discovering something here that I didn't know? I always love learning things. Are you telling me that in America there are places where it's illegal to quit your job?
No. I'm telling you that there are places.
Then you always have the right to say, no, I don't want to be a member of the union here. I'm going to leave.
Out of your livelihood. And that's not America. America is not one group of thugs standing there telling another group that they can't put food on their table because they won't cough up.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So you're saying that we have that we have a right to a job?
We're talking mafia tactics here.
You just said that. I believe that what I just heard you say is that when I said, hey, if you don't like being a member of the union, you can quit your job and work someplace else. You said, no, wait a minute. I have a right to a livelihood. You have a right to a job.
Exactly.
And do I hear that right?
Nobody has a right to tell me I can't work at a job except for perhaps the person who's offering me the job or gave me the job.
And nobody has a right to tell you that you must work at that job, right?
Pardon?
Nobody has the right to tell you that you must work at that job, right?
That's right.
So the freedom that you have, if you don't like the union, is you can leave.
No, I have a right to the free association of this union. If I'm going to, what's wrong? What don't you understand about your individual right to make decisions regarding your own life and putting food on your own
table? It's a democracy in the workplace, Mark.
A group of people who don't even know you, have nothing to do with you, and when you come into a union shop long after the union's in there,
okay,
you don't have to say one or another, even it's in there.
So you're making the argument that the people who don't even, you're making the argument that the people who don't even know me, the owners of the company, people who don't give a rat's ass about me, the distant stockholders in New York City, the people who run it, whatever, Mitt Romney, that somehow they shouldn't have some control over the workplace in which I operate, in which I work, even though they own it?
If they want it, of course they have a say.
Well, why should they have a say, but the elected union in that same workplace should not have a say?
They don't own it, nor do they own my labor, unless I grant it to them.
But they were elected.
Okay.
Okay. So you honor the value, you honor the power structure of rich owners, but not the power structure of workers.
If I own it, it's mine. If I don't own it, then I have to work to attain it.
Got it. People can check it out at marktalk.com. Thank you, Mark Williams.
Thanks, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm telling you, there is a huge war on labor that's been going on since Ronald Reagan was elected president and is ramping up right now.
The unions are to blame. There was a painful recession, and the CEO lost his yacht.
Can't have that.
He had to mortgage his summer home. It's one of just three he's got.
Oh, no, poor guy.
How could this happen? Well, I believe it's that one of his employees with health benefits filed a claim. I thought about it all weekend.
Yep, and who's to blame?
I thought about it on my sick day.
And who's to blame?
I thought about it on my paid vacation.
And
to this conclusion I came.
And what's that?
Unions are to blame.
Oh, yeah, of course. The unions are to blame. That's a great parody. Welcome back, Frank, in Bailey, Colorado. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
Just great, but I'll get better. How about you, Frank?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just a little concerned as to how this is going as far as, you know, the 1% taking, you know, charge of the 99%. Maybe we ought to think about starting a union, a national union that we're all involved with, mm-hmm. Jeep dues, and we'll have say in the and keeping these Republican and, you know, different corporate America agendas.
Well, we have one, actually, Frank. It's called the Government of the United States. and you have the right to run for, you know, union officer, you know, become a member of Congress or become a local, you know, committee person or a board of education member or state representative. And we need, frankly, more people participating in that union. In fact, the founders referred to this as a union, you recall, in the declaration or the preamble of the Constitution, in order to form a more perfect union. What more does it take, right?
Exactly.
Here you go, right there in the Constitution. You know, we hereby, you know, in order to form a more perfect union. So, yeah, good point, though, Frank. And by the way, the AFL-CIO does have a division. It's called America Working, I believe. And Google it, because I'm not sure that that's exactly the phrase, but I think it's AmericaWorking.com or .org, rather. But you can check it out. And the AFL-CIO has it, and it's free. You don't have to pay dues. And it's for people who want to be in a union, want to have, you know, be connected to a union, have some of the small benefits, at least, you know, the feedback information, things like that, and access to people who will stand up for them. And you can participate in that. We've had the person who's the president of that on the program a couple of times. So there are some efforts being made in the direction that you're talking about. But I like the idea of the diversity of the unions. I like the idea, Jefferson said, all power the greatest political power in America should rest at the level of the county, you know, of the ward, of the local precinct, that power in the United States should drive from the bottom up, not from the top down. And I think that by having a lot of different unions, by having, you know, federal laws that give them the right to fight back against employers and to stop union busting, that's a good thing. But by having a wide variety of unions in a whole bunch of different industries so that they can, you know, the Teamsters can talk about the issues of being a Teamster and the longshoremen and women can talk about an issue, you know, that has to do with, you know, working in the docks and the electrical workers can talk about the, I think that that's a really good and healthy thing. So, but Frank, great idea. Thanks a lot for the call and do appreciate it. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to also say, you know, that there's this weird kind of cultural competitiveness when it comes to different organizations and whatnot. And recently in Seattle, there was a little flap because the Longshoremen's Union resented the Occupy movement, which I think is an all-inclusive kind of movement as opposed to perhaps you know, their own union, which, you know, they said, quote unquote, that, you know, they didn't want the Occupy movement to take up their cause, that it was their cause. And the thing
By the way, if I may just slightly qualify what you're saying, there was not unanimity among the longshoremen about that. That ultimately, yes, that local union took that position, but there were a lot of people in the union who ended up standing with the Occupy folks.
They did, but I guess the thing is, I'd like to see solidarity amongst all these people on the left if we're going to wrestle power, you know, from a very organized, well-funded, you know, they own everything, corporate structure that owns in our government, then we really need to stick together. And it's been my, like, for instance, I've stood with union people at my workplace to help them, but on the other hand, I'm not organized in my particular area of my workplace. I work in a hospital. I'm a respiratory therapist. And we have really gotten screwed lately because as the profits have come down, you know, they do anything they can to sort of, you know, penalize us. And one of the things they've done is when it's slow, they tell you to stay home, you know. So essentially we've all been made part-time. But I don't see we have a very powerful nursing union, registered nursing union, and SEIU, which I both support myself. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see a real solidarity. And I'd like to see a Labor Party or something, an umbrella, which we could all go under to fight, you know, this. Because
you know what I'd like to see is if the Democratic Party, which historically had been the party of labor, was to once again become the party of labor across the board, because there are large factions in the Democratic Party that are so-called right-to-work for less factions. You know, they you know, the some of these Democrats who represent the right-for-work for less states will, as Rick Santorum pointed out in the debate last night, he was attacked by his Republican peers for voting in you know, to allow unionization to continue, to not turn Pennsylvania into a right to work for less state, and to not, in fact, force the entire nation to become right to work for less states. And he said, I was representing the interests of the people in Pennsylvania. The people of Pennsylvania don't want to become a right to work for less state. And you know, tragically, you've got a bunch of Democrats in the House and Senate who represent right to work for less states, and they're doing that dance. I'd like to just have the Democratic Party back, frankly. And I think that we're moving in that direction, John. I think so.
But
you know, hopefully, it's going to take some time. Thanks a lot for the call. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So the war on labor, the war on ethnic studies, the Republican war on itself?
A raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me.
It's raining. Here's the inside joke we haven't talked about. I'll just mention it very briefly. This morning, Jacob called. He got into the studio before Louise and I did. We were at home preparing the news, and he said, "I think we have an emergency here. There's water coming out of the light fixture in the ceiling, and it has soaked one of the equipment racks, the one that produces all of our television, you know, stuff, all the video." And So we came in, and, yeah, it was soaked. I mean, it was just soaked. It piped up, the stairs burst. But we're still keeping going. We're running our video off of two laptops, and the audio, of course, everything is just fine there. And thank goodness, knock on wood. And so for all our radio stations, everything is just great. And for our TV stations, they're carrying the show as well. So anyhow, back to the issues of the day. Joyce in Arcadia, California. Hey, Joyce. Thanks for listening to KTLK. What's up?
Hello, Tom. I love your show. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
You know, it's just amazing to me. I love what you're talking about. As a almost 68-year-old African-American female, I have been keenly interested in, you know, the oppression issues and racism, and it's just so ignorant. It's all based on ignorance, and especially ignorance of history. Mm-hmm. We all should know what all peoples of this world have done to make it a better place.
Yeah.
And I have a blog, and I wrote a piece on December 22nd. It's called I Picture This World. And I picture this world, Tom, as like a gigantic mouth, and we are all teeth in that mouth. And we're all teeth in various conditions. There are some teeth that are gold-plated, which would represent the 1%, you know. And then there are teeth that appear to be in good condition. Then there are other teeth that are not gold-plated. Then there are teeth that have that are a little shaky, you know, loose. Mm-hmm. And then there are others that have small cavities and others that have huge cavities. And then the mouth goes to the dentist, but the mouth tells the dentist that, I don't want you to pay any attention to the teeth that are not strong or gold-plated and all that. Just take care of the gold-plated teeth. Now, the dentist knows that the mouth can be repaired. All the teeth need to be cleaned. Some need filling. Some need to be pulled and replaced with implants, bridges, caps, and all of that. But they're all sitting in the same mouth, a mouth That's with right. infested gums.
Yep.
And
okay.
if we are not all taken care of and treated, then we're going to lose, all the teeth are going to be lost, including the gold-plated one.
There you go. So well said, Joyce. Are you a dental hygienist?
No, I'm not.
That's a brilliant metaphor. It's a brilliant metaphor. Thank you very much for calling, and thanks for listening to KTLK. It's great to hear from you. Thank you so much. That was really cool. Milo in Live Oak, Florida. Hey, Milo, what's up?
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, I've been very blessed. When I went to the School of Human Services in New Hampshire College, I was able to meet two outstanding people, one being Howard Zinn mm-hmm. and the other being Paulo Freire.
Uh-huh.
What I really liked about both of them was that they both gave the same message, that the most critical thing that we need to have in our life for any human being on the planet is participation.
Yeah.
No matter in what it is that they do, that they're involved in that situation.
That's why at the end of every day and the end of my show, I say, get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Because if we don't all show up and participate, our democracy, our republic, whatever you want to call it, is, you know, it's already halfway bought out from underneath us. And they're just going to take the whole thing.
Right. And Paulo Freire talks about the difference between being an object and the difference between being a subject.
Yeah.
When you're a subject, you participate. When you're an object, you're used, you're talked at. Yeah. You're expected to be dumbed down and to listen to and to take orders.
Yeah. Excellent.
And the thing about the curriculum for the Chicanos is basically that it's a program for critical thinking, to be able to analyze what your situation of oppression is for yourself and how to be able to go about to change that. Mm-hmm. And that makes you a subject in your education and not an object.
Yeah. And the reality is that the people who are opposing this, I'll bet that three-quarters of them, you know, the good white people of Arizona, basically, three-quarters of them, if you ask them, do you know what white privilege is, they would not be able to answer the question. You know, they don't understand that they were born with hundreds of years of advantage, born with that over people of color. And it's just, anyway,
This is not something new. Education is under attack.
No.
For example, Richard Nixon really understood the movement of the 60s against the Vietnam War when he saw all the young protesters out there, and he knew that the educational system that they were getting, like places like Berkeley, California, they were a threat to his continuing the war. So what did he do right in the middle of the war? They had a program for Adopt a School program, which all that meant was let's get corporations more involved in schooling.
Let's take them
into the school, run the curriculums, change the curriculums.
I had completely forgotten about that. Adopt a school and help them out and get your absolutely. That's amazing. Milo, I want to get some more calls in, but thank you for your contribution. I appreciate it. And you're right. Critical thinking is the key. Claudia in Land of Lakes, Florida, from Florida to Florida. Hey, Claudia, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think that the people who are calling in and they're having these very difficult feelings about changing the curriculum, especially in Arizona, these people are afraid to agree to you, to agree with you or anyone else who says anything different. Because if they do, then what they've been saying and thinking and believing themselves is a lie. Is not true, and there's something wrong with it. Just as the man from the Tea Party who said that that the unions prevented him from being an individual. Well, the corporations who run the place in which he worked, the building, they allow the unions to work. So his beef shouldn't be with the unions. His beef should be with the people who employ them.
Yeah. Well, and if I can add one thing, not only if they acknowledged what I'm suggesting and I believe what you agree with, that American history is basically has traditionally been really white history and that, you know, racism is endemic in our society and that we need to have a multicultural historical perspective, and we need to acknowledge some of these things. And this is the reverse of what they're trying to do right now in Arizona by shutting down the school district's ability to teach these things. That not only would they have to acknowledge that everything that they believe is a lie, but the biggest thing that they would have to give up is this belief that I think to a man and woman, Republicans and conservatives share, which is that they got where they are purely by their own virtue, and they don't realize that there's an entire society behind them, and that if they were born wealthy like Mitt Romney, or if they were simply born white like so many people in America who are successful in business, that gave them a benefit that people who are not born wealthy or who are not born white or who are not born male for that matter don't have. And they would have to start realizing that some of their success isn't because they're just the most brilliant person on earth, but it's just plain old good-fashioned luck, good old-fashioned luck, or, circumstances. I mean, it's just, hey, this is how the game has been rigged, and you happen to be born into the rigged side of it rather than the unrigged side of it. And they do not want to go there. They do not want to acknowledge that. They are so afraid of that.
Absolutely. One other thing I would like to say is that the corporations, I guess the 1%, they're using these fears, they're using the individual's prejudices to promote more of the same so that they don't have to deal with the rest of us.
Yes.
If they can get enough people to believe that knowing Hispanic history is bad, that knowing about black history is bad, that knowing about any other history is bad, then they have won. We would be under their yoke, and we can be led, and we can be moved in any direction in which they want us.
Right.
Carl Sandburg has this poem called The People, Yes. It was written in 1936. He said, and this is just an excerpt from it, he says, "They, the people, will be tricked and sold and again sold."
Yeah.
This is what is happening to us. We're being sold, or some of us are being sold a bill of goods that somehow, if you help other people, something's wrong with that. That is something wrong with those people rather than something wrong with them
with society or with the culture or with the cultural assumptions. And the other thing that they're promoting like crazy is that, well, okay, back in the 60s, you all, you know, got together and did your legal things and you had, you know, affirmative action and everything. And so now everything's fine and there is no more racism and, we, you know, we can just stop that conversation, et cetera, et cetera. And really what they're trying to do is take us back before the 60s, even before, you know, you get what I'm saying. So,
yes, I do.
Claudia, thank you so much. If you have 10 seconds, we have 10 seconds.
Okay, I was just going to say those Christian conservatives have forgotten what Christ said when he was against the Sanhedrin Council.
Very well said, Claudia.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service in a few minutes, find out what's going on in the world, particularly here in Washington, D.C., and then back with your calls and more thoughts.
Well, how am I doing since you did what you've done to me? I can't lie, sometimes cry when I think of how it used to be.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, going on our ninth year here. Tom Hartman here with you, and Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Self-Empowerment. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, various developments with regard to Mitt Romney's tax returns are up today.
Oh,
very
really?
Interesting developments, yes. He spoke at a press availability shortly after a morning town hall in South Carolina, and Romney said about his taxes, it's probably closer to the 15% rate than anything. Saying, for the past 10 years, my income comes overwhelmingly from investments made in the past rather than ordinary income or earned annual income. I got a little bit of income from my book, but I gave that away. Then I get speaker's fees from time to time, but not very much. By the way, he got $374,000 last year from speaker's fees.
That's not very much for a guy like that.
Not very much. No, not very much. But he pays about 15% in income tax, which could, of course, be a reason why he has held back his tax returns, because, of course, he may pay less than his secretary.
Yes. Now, and it's not he may. He does.
He does.
I will bet you Mitt Romney's $10,000 that he does.
I think he does. Now, two interesting developments subsequent to that. One is Newt Gingrich has pounded him today, going further, saying that if you're a South Carolinian, you're saying, wait a second, why don't you want me to know about it? Why are you going to wait until after I voted? Because Romney said last night he'd release them in April. He says, it strikes me he ought to do it before South Carolina votes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was the gist of the question last night. And basically he said, well, you know, Bush and Bush and Reagan or somebody?
Yeah.
Bush and Clinton, somebody. He quoted two presidents. Anyhow, he said they released their tax returns around April. So I think I'll do it in April. Well, they do it every year in April because that's when you file your tax returns.
Exactly.
And he has
a tax return from last year, which he could release right now.
Yes.
Well, then, another very interesting development, as you know, there's a new Washington Post ABC News poll out about Americans' disaffection with Congress. And I know you have some suspicion about some polls, but there's a very interesting new finding that the Post has just released, which is about capitalism and economic unfairness. Here's the question. What do you think is the bigger problem in this country? Unfairness in the economic system that favors the wealthy, or overregulation of the free market that interferes with growth and prosperity? Economic unfairness, 55. Market overregulation, 35.
Wow. And this was just across the board, all Americans?
Across the board. Then there's a partisan breakdown. Moderates see economic unfairness on behalf of the wealthy as a bigger problem by 59 to 29.
Whoa.
And those who see unfairness as the problem break 2 to 1 in support for Obama.
Wow. So this is like, here's your campaign theme, Mr. Obama. Please take it. By the way, Victoria, you used the word capitalism. Frank Luntz says that you're not supposed to use the word capitalism. It was not mentioned once last night in the Republican debate. You're supposed to use the phrase free enterprise. Because
I didn't get my talking point.
Of course, you're not a Republican, so I guess you're allowed to use the word capitalism.
I'm not on the list. I didn't get an email.
Yeah, I mean, you might be a Republican, but you're not a Republican spokesperson. So.
Right, exactly. I didn't get the list. Now, independents see economic unfairness as a bigger problem by 52-38, but they split evenly between Obama and the Republican. However, we have to bear in mind that they don't know very much about the Republican candidate yet.
Right. And when they find out that the Republican candidate pays 15% income tax, whereas President Obama is paying 35% income tax, as most Americans do, 99% of Americans do, and Mitt Romney is paying, he's only paying the capitalist gains tax. He's not paying ordinary income tax. And he's paying nothing into the Social Security system on the vast majority of his income. There's going to be some serious head scratching going on in this country.
I think there are going to be a lot of questions. So it's a very interesting finding. So that's one piece of news. Also, the House is back in session today, as they return from their intra-session district work period.
otherwise known as holiday, as the Christmas, New Year, Hanukkah, holiday, whatever you call it, break.
Yes, but we're not calling it a recess because we don't know if it was.
Right.
That's up to the courts to decide. Well, it will be when somebody sues.
Is somebody going to?
Cordray's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Oh, I think they will.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't been announced already, frankly.
Yeah, I think they will. They've got a lot of issues to deal with, and they're going to do nothing today.
Well, they're going to, name a post office after Ronald Reagan someplace?
No, I think they may actually vote in the new sergeant-at-arms, but basically they'll do a couple of gavels, and then that's all they'll do today. But tomorrow, we'll talk about this tomorrow. Tomorrow they're going to vote on a resolution of disapproval of President Obama's request to raise the debt ceiling.
Right. And this is just an obligatory gesture so that they can include it in their campaign ads that they did it, because they really don't have the power to stop him.
Exactly. But there's also going to be an opportunity for conservative lawmakers to go off against the leadership with whom they are still furious.
Leadership meaning in the Senate, Harry Reid, or in the House, John Boehner?
In the House, John Boehner, because it's just going to be in the House tomorrow. Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
So the war within the Republican Party, the Tea Party, by the way, the average, did you know that the average Tea Party Republican in the House of Representatives has a net worth of $1.6 million, whereas the average non-Tea Party Republican in the House of Representatives has a net worth of around $600,000?
No!
It's about a third as much? Yeah. The Tea Party caucus is the richest caucus in all of Congress, in the House of Representatives.
I thought they represented the people.
Well, yeah, they do. The people who have more than $1 million.
That's fascinating.
It is. It really is. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Up next, Garland Gilchrist from MoveOn.org on the January 18th. It's about a mysterious blackout that's coming. Stay tuned.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tomorrow is going to be an interesting day if you surf the web. There are a number of sites, including MoveOn.org, that are going to go dark. Why? Well, we have these... Actually, let me let Garland tell you all about this. Garland Gilchrist is with us. He is the National Campaign Director of MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org, of course, the website. Garland, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
Garland, what... We have these... So elegantly named, Internet, the Protect IP Act, PIPA, and the Stop Online Piracy Act, SOPA. Who could possibly object to protecting the Internet and stopping pirates?
Well, the first thing we need to do is actually call these bills what they are. We call them the Internet censorship bills because that's really what they're intended to do. It's the classic, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater type of bill that threatens the Internet itself just to appease a bunch of big media companies and their lobbyists.
And how did they come about?
Well, last summer, a bunch of media companies thought they really could just wave their wallets in front of the Senate and the House and get whatever bills they wanted passed. They wanted legislation that would do some terrible things to the Internet, including something called DNS filtering, which enables websites to be blocked in the same way they're blocked in China or Iran. And even more startlingly, they basically wanted to create new penalties for linking to websites that might have allegedly copywritten content. I mean, one example that clearly states how bad this is they actually want to do something like eliminate Justin Bieber from the face of the earth, or the face of the Internet at least. They want to make it illegal for kids to sing songs on YouTube and post themselves singing songs just because it may be something that one of their artists have created. I mean, it's really horrendous.
Yeah, and this all in the name of protecting the artists, but I suppose in a few cases there are artists who are supporting this, but by and large, this is mostly supporting large transnational corporations who make all of their money off copyrights. Is that not right?
Absolutely. Independent artists have actually spoken up very loudly against this legislation because they know that the Internet is a place where creativity thrives, and these big corporate media companies really are only worried about preserving their old, antiquated, and outdated business models.
So, Garland, what is MoveOn.org going to do? What are you doing right now, and what are you going to be doing with your website tomorrow?
So MoveOn.org is joining Reddit.com, Wikipedia, Mozilla, WordPress, and a lot of other major websites tomorrow by going completely dark and blacking out our website on January 18th tomorrow. We're doing this to show what the Internet would look like in an era where this Internet censorship bill passes and these lobbyists get their way. So when you go to any of these major websites and thousands of others, you're going to see a message that tells you exactly what's happening. This is what the world would look like, what the Internet would look like in a world where Internet censorship is legal in the United States. And then we'll have information. We'll have people be able to click on a link to be able to see what they can do and how they can stop this legislation from becoming law.
Who are the villains and heroes, for lack of a better word, in the House and Senate who are promoting or who are opposing? Ron Wyden has before he kind of went crazy on one issue on this Internet censorship issue. He's been actually really good, and he's probably been the main face of stopping the PIPA Act in the Senate. But who else beyond Ron Wyden is a good guy, and who are the bad guys in this?
Well, another good guy who you might find surprising, Tom, is Representative Daryl Issa. He's actually been the champion against Internet censorship in the House of Representatives. The real villains here are, really, if you think about it, one, the lobbyists that thought that making Arthur would be a summer blockbuster last year, the people who get paid by those crazy lobbyists, and then the people who get campaign contributions from those lobbyyists. So you have people like Representative Lamar Smith, Representative John Conyers, who have also been strong supporters of this really bad legislation.
John Conyers has supported this?
He is supporting this legislation, yes.
That blows my mind. He's so good on so many issues. Is it
Absolutely.
Possible that it's just, you know, it is so seemingly, you know, common sense and innocuous to, hey, let's protect American commerce kind of thing that people have been duped, or is there something else going on?
I think that is part of it. I mean, these bills are well named to get them snuck through Congress. But also, I think it's just another example of money in politics and how it can make great progressive politicians sometimes do very questionable things. And that's why it's so important for people, for their constituents, to speak up and speak out about these issues. I mean, there's great momentum building against this legislation, not the least of which a great statement coming from the White House, where they essentially rejected these bills as written by saying that they're not going to support anything that will damage the structure of the Internet. And also, every representative and member of Congress and senator that has changed their position, including Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland, who was an original co-sponsor of the Senate bill, have said that they changed their positions because they heard from their constituents. They heard from the people that voted for them, telling them how bad this was. Right. So it's a great example in this fight of people speaking up and speaking over lobbyists and getting their elected officials to represent them and what they want.
This is our opportunity to stand up, speak out, be there, tag your it, get active, all that kind of thing. Garland, what means is best? I mean, I'm assuming that at MoveOn.org, outside of, well, actually even tomorrow when the site goes black, you will have one link to what you can do. I'm assuming that there's links there right now about what you can do, who you can contact, how you do it, what you say. Assuming that that assumption is correct, what are those things that you should do?
Absolutely. So today you'll be able to go to MoveOn.org/blackout and be able to see all the activities that we're going to be having going on tomorrow in solidarity with Wikipedia and Reddit and everything. I mean, we just got word that Google will actually have a link on their homepage talking about this legislation and the problems it presents. Tomorrow, people should begin in earnest calling their senators and letting them know that they do not want the Internet to be censored. The Senate will be voting on January 24th, next week, the same day as the State of the Union, on whether to proceed with this bill in the Senate. This is our opportunity to block it and to take it off of the table. We've been successful in really putting the brakes on the House version of the bill, and now we need to do the same with a big, strong statement and show of power on this bill in the Senate, starting tomorrow and going all the way through next week.
My understanding of this bill, Garland, is that, for example, I have a message board over at TomHartmann.com, and that if somebody were to post a message on my message board where pretty much anybody who just registers for the site can create their own blog and then other people can comment on it, or they can start a thread, a discussion thread, and, you know, have a debate or a discussion or whatever, that if somebody were to simply copy something from some copyrighted website and pop it onto onto their post on my site, that I could be hit with millions of dollars of fines and maybe even jail time. Do I understand that correctly?
That's true, and it's even worse than that, Tom, because not only could someone just copy and paste allegedly copyright-infringing content, but they could also unknowingly link to a website that has allegedly copyright-infringing content, and that can put both the person that posted that and your site in jeopardy of these huge fines and of being taken right. down without due process.
And so presumably that's why Daryl Issa, the only member of Congress with actually a criminal background. I mean, you know, he's a very bizarre right-wing Republican. But it's the right-wing Republicans on talk radio who have message boards like I do, who are opposed to this also.
Well, this is what's so amazing about this movement against this legislation. I mean, MoveOn.org and the Tea Party Patriots don't agree on a lot, but we sure agree on this, and they're standing up and saying they don't want this legislation either.
That's amazing. That is marvelous. Garland Gilchrist II, MoveOn.org. He's the National Campaign Director. You can read all about it at MoveOn.org, of course, and I encourage you to check it out. And we'll have links, of course, over at TomHartmann.com. And tomorrow we'll have links out to what you can do. Garland, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always an honor and pleasure to have you on the program. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Amazing. An attempt to censor the Internet in the United States. Will they pull it off?
You better get in touch with the people, big brother. Get them on your side, big brother. Keep them satisfied, yeah. Walk them to the feet of the sinner street. Walk on now, don't be shy. And take a closer look at the people you meet. And notice the fear in their eyes.
Amazing. Mitt Romney comes out today. This from the Center for American Progress. Citizens for Tax Justice a few months ago estimated that Mitt Romney, due to most of his income coming from investments, pays a tax rate of around 14%. Now, this is a guy who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars and has an annual income that is probably well into the millions. A far cry, by the way, 14%, a far cry from the 35% top income tax rate. This is Pat Garofalo writing over at the Center for American Progress's Think Progress Economy. Romney then confirmed that the bulk of his income does indeed come from investments. In other words, he is a capitalist. And so instead of paying normal income taxes like I do because I work, like you probably do because you work, or even if you get Social Security, you pay normal income tax on it as if you worked, maybe, or other forms of, you know, entitlement programs. But if you're a capitalist, there's a special class of tax for you. It's called the capitalist gains tax. They actually call it the capital gain tax because calling it capitalist would refer to the person rather than the money. But I call it the capitalist gains tax. And the capitalist gains tax is actually graduated. You know, I've told the story here before about I've been out of the stock market forever, ever since 2006 when I saw the housing market crash and I said I'm getting out of the stock market. And I'm never had that much in there anyway. But I did back 20 years ago or so when I was doing a lot of training and a lot of teaching and a lot of traveling. Marriott had this not particularly well thought out promotion. They were trying to sell stock. They were, I don't know if they were doing an IPO or what, but it wouldn't have been an IPO, but they were trying to encourage ownership of their stock. And so they said stockholders got a 10% discount in Marriott's. And I was working, we had an ad agency and we did a lot of training of business people. And so and Marriott's a good venue. We did a lot of them in Marriott's and Hilton's and, you know, these kind of upscale hotels. And so I bought one share of Marriott stock. It cost me $22. And this would have been like in 87. And I got the actual certificate. I said, send me the certificate. So they sent me a certificate for one share of stock. And I stuck it in my wallet. And I'd go to the hotel and I'd pull that stock certificate out and I'd drop it on the desk. And they'd say, okay, you get the 10% discount. Well, after about a year, Marriott figured out that wasn't all that bright, that I had saved hundreds of dollars by buying one piece of stock for $22. And every year they had to spend, you know, 50 cents worth of postage and printing to send me a stockholder's annual report and the stockholder's voting form and all this other stuff. I had one share of stock. But I've kept it over the years, frankly, because it's easier than doing anything else. You know, it's not that I'm lazy. I'm insanely busy. I mean, who has the time to cash in a, you know, and it's split. It keeps splitting. It's now like 4.37 shares of stock or something like that. And it's now worth something like $200. And every 3 months, I get in the mail a check from Marriott. And it used to be the checks were for 3 cents and for 4 cents because this is a dividend. As a stockholder, you get a, you know, when the company has a profit, they split that up and they mail it out. And so, you know, it used to be 4 cents, 10 cents. I think that the last check that I got from Marriott was for like $1.22. Now, because I, you know, my total dividend income in the course of a year is certainly easily under $100. I mean, with all whatever stock I may have, you know, whatever, it's very little. And my Marriott income is like $2. Well, actually, it's four times a year, so it's $10. It's 10% of my total, but. The capital gains tax is graduated, so I pay maybe 1% capital gains tax because I don't have that much capitalist gains. I'm not a capitalist. But if I made more than $100,000 or $200,000 a year in dividends, I would hit the ceiling. Now, it's just like your normal tax. Like, you know, if you work at Walmart as a greeter, you don't make any money. You don't pay any federal income tax because you're making $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 a year. If you've got a family, on the other hand, if you're a manager at Walmart and you're making $25,000 or $30,000 a year, you might, or you know, senior manager, you might actually pay 15% income tax or 20% income tax. I don't know the tax table; I don't have them memorized. But the point is that as your income goes up, your tax rate goes up. It's the same thing with a capitalist gains tax. So with normal workers, your top tax rate peaks out at 35 or 36% right now. Used to be 39% when George Bush came into office. He dropped it down to 36%, saying this is going to create jobs. And, of course, when Bush left office, he had lost 1.9 million jobs. But all that said, so if you labor, then, you know, you get you maximum 36% income tax. But if you're a capitalist like Mitt Romney, if you make your money by money instead of by work, if you make your money sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, or in Mitt Romney's case, if you make your money running around the country running for president in your private jet, you know, with your dog tied to the roof, if you make your money that way, I wonder if he ties his dog to the roof of his private jet. I'll bet he doesn't. Anyway, if you make your money that way, when you hit you start making millions of dollars a year, you hit the top tax rate for capitalists, it's 15%. By the way, my Marriott shares, which are now like 4.13 shares, you know, a couple hundred dollars worth of stock that was originally at $22. They keep every year, they send me a letter saying, we would like to buy this back from you. Because, you know, it's a huge hassle for them to send me. I mean, they've every year they've got to send me like this 30-page annual report, and I get to vote on who's going to be the chairman of the board and all this. You know, I have 4.5 votes, right? Like, it's going to be a big deal. But it's a huge hassle for them. So they like capitalists like Mitt Romney, who's probably a huge stockholder in Marriott. I don't know, but it's, you know, one of the larger mostly Mormon-owned corporations. But here it is. He has come out today. He came out and he said, somebody asked him and they said, how much do you pay in income tax? And he said, it's probably closer to the 15% rate.
Right. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, bad, and the very, very ugly, like Mitt Romney sitting on his butt around the pool waiting for that dividend check to arrive. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very astrophysiologically ugly. The good, Stephen Colbert. The comedian is keeping up his crusade to highlight the absurdity of the Citizens United decision. A new ad is up and running, brought to us by Colbert's former super PAC that is now under the control of John Stewart. The ad calls on South Carolina voters to support Herman Cain, who's been out of the race for months after being forced to drop out amid sexual harassment allegations. The ad describes Cain as such a Washington outsider, he's not even running for president. Thanks to Citizens United, our corporate-funded elections are absurd. At least now, they're funny, too. The bad. Lou Dobbs. Last night on his Fox Business show, Dobbs interviewed soon-to-be-recalled Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. And while most of us would consider a governor who went on the attack against working people, sparking protests of hundreds of thousands of people, leading to two state senators in his own party being recalled, and he himself facing a recall election, most of us would consider that a radical failure. Dobbs sees it another way. Lou lavished praise on Governor Walker, calling him arguably one of the, if not the best, governors in the country. Makes you wonder what planet Lou is living on nowadays. But expect similar antics from Fox so-called news over the next few months as the network pulls out all the stops to keep their boy Scott Walker in office. And the very, very ugly Liz Cheney. The Fox so-called news talking head whose only credential for appearing on TV is being the daughter of a war criminal vice president is at it again with completely baseless attacks against President Obama. Commenting on planned cuts to the defense budget, Liz Cheney said President Obama is on the brink of doing to the U.S. military what our enemies have been unable to do. Right. President Obama will destroy the military by trimming the bloated war budget that wastes billions of dollars a year. Our nation is in more danger today because of all the wars started by the likes of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. And the only way we can turn things around is to bring our troops home and end the never-ending war machine. And that means we have to stop listening to warmongers like Liz Cheney. They're just very, very ugly. And boy, is that the case. So, state of Arizona is at it again, this time banning books. Washington Post ABC poll shows that 84% of Americans disapprove of the job that Congress is doing. Over 500,000 signatures are being turned in today in Wisconsin in the Recall Scott Walker campaign. You know, when they say, hey, I got a ton of signatures here, they mean it literally in Wisconsin. 2,000 pounds. They're turning in a ton of signatures. Looks like Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish are going to stand for re-election isn't the word, de-election isn't the word, well, against a recall in any case. And, of course, the Koch brothers or whoever, you know, the billionaire buddies. Scott has been out of town, out of the state a whole lot lately, probably why he was on Fox News yesterday, Fox Business News, begging for money from millionaires and billionaires so that they can dump tens of millions of dollars into this campaign to keep him in his seat. So we'll see. And, of course, last night, the 3,000th Republican debate, more or less, seems like it anyway. And the crowd got in the game. This time they've cheered executions. They've cheered letting sick people die. They have in the past cheered that poor children should work in our schools, washing the toilets of their peers, of their wealthier peers. Last night they did it again. In fact, they gave a standing ovation for that, just in case anybody's keeping track. It's pretty amazing, really, when you consider all of it. It's really, really pretty amazing. Stephen in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Stephen, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. You know, Tom, your talk about what's going on in Arizona reminds me of something that I never forgot in school in about 6th or 7th grade. Looking at the American history book, there was one page with minorities, African Americans. One page, one side King, the other side Malcolm X. And that was just about all the representation of us that we had as one African American in an 80% white school district. And that always stuck with me. And I always thought our representation was much richer than that. And
yeah.
I just wanted to expand on that.
The representation of any people is richer than that. Every single, whether you want to call it a race or a culture or a people or a nationality or whatever, has a rich history. And one of the ways that cultures, and thank you, Stephen, for calling and giving me the stepping off point for a rant on this. One of the way I actually wrote about this is a whole chapter on this in a book I wrote called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. One of the ways that culture subsumes, eats alive. Jack Forbes, Native American, recently deceased. He died last year. Professor of Native American Studies at the University of California, Davis. I was very sad to hear when he died because he was a brilliant man. And I interviewed him for Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and I quote him extensively in the book. And he wrote a book called Columbus and Other Cannibals. And he shared with me a Native American word, wetiko, which means literally cannibal, but really, Dr. Forbes said, this word really means one who consumes the life force of another. And he said that the way that a culture destroys the culture of others and not just assimilates them, but assimilates them in a way that they are the servants of the culture rather than the masters of the culture is by destroying their connection to their own past. If you can destroy the connection of a people to their own past, then you can control them. This is why when the French Revolution happened, and I encourage you to read the history of the French Revolution. It's fascinating. Maximilien Robespierre, he said, we are going to break with everything in the past. We're going to invent France anew. And they made Christianity illegal. They changed the names of each day of the week because they were all based on Roman or Greek gods. They changed the holidays. They reset the calendar at the year zero because the Roman calendar is from the birth of Christ. The Jewish calendar is arguably from the beginning of Adam and Eve, or a particular point. Frankly, I don't pretend to be a scholar of Jewish history, so I don't know, but I believe it's the beginning of Genesis. Pol Pot. Louise and I were on a boat sailing through the Straits of Malacca off the coast of Malaysia and Indonesia and with Borneo on the other side. And on this boat with us, we were it was between having sold businesses and we were taking some time off and it was one of our retirements. And some friends, Rick and Wanda Bogan, were with us. And there was a fellow on the ship. This was one of these little sailing ships that holds maybe 30 people. And he was, his name was Will Crinan. And he was a medical doctor. Brilliant guy. I wrote about him in my book, ADD, A Different Perception. And he had spent the last 20 or 30 years. He was retired. He had just retired. He was at that point in his late 50s, I would guess, maybe early 60s. And we were young'uns. And he had spent the last decade or so in Cambodia as the doctor to Pol Pot. Not just Pol Pot, but basically he was in that region, and Pol Pot was, you know, the dictator of Cambodia, and he was one of his patients, and he was there the day that Pol Pot died. And he had these horrific stories to tell us about how Pol Pot, you know, the reason why Pol Pot decided that, you know, he murdered over 2 million people in Cambodia. And the reason why the first people he went after were people who wore glasses, because they were clearly literate. And he reinvented the calendar so that the first year was the year zero, and renamed the months and the days in ways that were consistent with this brand new culture that he was going to create. He was going to create a new culture the way that, in retrospect, the Romans did with the Roman Christian / Catholic culture, or, you know, I mean, pick your country. But he was trying to create an absolute break, what Daniel Quinn in his Ishmael books referred to as a great forgetting. And if you can create that great forgetting, if you can break people from their past, and then you can say, oh, but we'll let you into our culture. We're a very inclusive culture. We'll let you play in our sandbox. We'll let you be part of our society. You just have to be like us. Then what you have done is, if that person isn't in every respect like the us of that culture, if they don't, by family, by lineage, by nationality, by race, by genetic, whatever, if they don't share that, they're always going to, at a certain level, be outsiders within the culture. And the velvet glove over the iron fist of a dominator culture is that, oh, just become just like the rest of us, and we'll give you every opportunity. You too can rise to the top. Just look at Herman Cain, for example. And really, it's a lie. It is really the most vicious of cultural genocide, forms of cultural genocide. And Professor Forbes told me, we in the United States, this is, and you're across Europe, these are Wetzikó cultures. And I would say it's not unique to us. I mean, the Mayans and the Aztecs did the same thing against the indigenous people who lived in their area back 15,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. So there's an old history to this, but that's how it works.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So we've also been talking about union benefits, retiree benefits, the politics of envy, teaching history. We'll get back to your calls and thoughts on that as we wrap the show in the next 15 minutes.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Well, speaking about, you know, from one Canadian, in this case Leonard Cohen, to another, Bob in Montreal, Canada. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind? Thanks for waiting so long on hold.
All right. What I wanted to talk about is I listened to a show yesterday with the Martin Luther King Day, and they were talking about how the blacks were being basically persecuted. They were the ones that, with the drug laws, that they're really going after them,
yeah,
and putting them into prison. And I kind of put together that, like, it was 1965 with the Voting Rights Act that allowed blacks to register more easily, and they had a huge increase in black voters, right, as a result. But the 14th Amendment, well, back in the 1800s, gives the states the right to take away voting rights from anyone who's a felon. So in 73, with Nixon, with his Drug Enforcement Administration, the prison population has just ballooned, but it's been mostly blacks.
Yeah.
So they gave them the right to vote in 65. That would be the Democrats. And then in 73, Nixon sets up this DEA, and they go after the black population because the people who deal in the drugs and stuff, for the whites is just as much as blacks. Everyone's involved in it.
Whites actually are more likely to abuse illegal drugs, both as a percentage of their representation in the population and in absolute numbers. Whites are more likely to use or abuse and sell illegal drugs than are African Americans. On the other hand, African Americans are radically more likely, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but we know that it's orders of magnitude more likely to be arrested for the same behaviors and prosecuted and imprisoned.
Yeah, that's what, and then as a result of being in prison, they lose the right to vote.
That's right.
Which, of course, we know that blacks vote Democrat more than they vote Republican.
Yeah.
And so it's the whole thing. I mean, I was just listening to that yesterday, and it all came together that, well, you know, they let them in through one door through the Voting Rights Act, and then the Republicans figure out a way to disenfranchise them again.
Yeah, and then to add insult to injury, you know, things like, you know, Newt Gingrich running around talking about, oh, my food stamp comment's not racist, and my washing the toilets in the bathroom in the school isn't a racist comment, and I don't understand why people might take it this way, and Rick Scott down in Florida, oh yeah, we're going to drug test all the welfare recipients, oh, there's no racial component to that, and it's just because Rick Scott owns a hospital chain and he makes a lot of money from drug testing. You're absolutely right, Bob. You are absolutely right. And thank you for calling it out and calling it so clearly. Audrey in Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Audrey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great. I hope the same is true of you.
You know, I am. You gotta love living in sunny Southern California, and I'm kind of new here, which is actually why I'm calling. I lived in Phoenix when the law that targeted the Tucson schools was passed. And at that time, living in Arizona, it was like they were passing some ridiculous law each week.
Right.
You know, we were afraid to turn on the news.
Right. It was, were your papers, please, 1 week. No, we can't teach Latino history the next week, et cetera. You can carry a gun anywhere you want the week after that.
So we're happy to be out of there, as you can imagine. But at the time that happened, my husband and I were just flabbergasted because of how obviously ridiculous and targeted it was, but also because we felt like, you know, when we were in college, we took a lot of different history classes. You know, you're required to take three of this and four of this. It's like ordering off of a menu.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took a variety, and we thought, you know, this is so stupid because when I took American history in college, there were only two women mentioned in the entire American history course, neither one of which was Betsy Ross. And I was thinking, obviously, there were more women.
Yeah.
I had to take women's history to find out. And that's what we kind of came up with, was why don't they order history or offer history as a quarter system, as in they have all these different histories. You know, you can have American history and African-American history and European history and Latin American history. And, you know, you can have so many different types of history.
Yep.
And require X number, you know, to graduate, you need to take X number of different history courses and then pick what you want. And you can make certain things like American history required or civics, I wish, or whatever. But that way, people would have to take a variety because you can only get so much white people's history in there.
Yeah.
Before you wind up having to learn about other groups.
There you go. Audrey, excellent suggestion. Thank you for calling and sharing it with us. I appreciate it. We're just 1 minute to go here. Noah in Madison, Wisconsin, you have an update on the Scott Walker recall petitions?
Yeah, I was a circulator of the petitions. I volunteered, and I just got an email from United Wisconsin that informed me that we collected over 1 million signatures.
Wow. You needed 540,000 to get them on the ballot, right?
Yep.
So over a million.
That's correct.
That is marvelous.
Yep, over a million.
So even if there was some mischief by some right wingers saying, "Oh yeah, I'm going to fill one of these things out." Let's see, Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, whatever. It won't matter. There's way more than enough to get. So Scott Walker is going to have to beg a few more million bucks off the Koch brothers, I'm guessing.
Yep, that's what he's going to have to do. It looks like.
Has he started running his ads yet in Wisconsin?
I've seen a few. I live in Madison, so I don't think he's focusing as much on my area because it's a pretty liberal City.
Yeah, so he'll be blanketing the state with ads, but probably not Madison. In fact, that might even bring a reaction that would cause people to be out in the streets. Noah, thanks a lot for the update, and much appreciated. And thanks for listening in Madison, Wisconsin. Whew, what a day. And don't forget, democracy, republic, whatever you want to call it, this, you know, our system can't work unless we do, unless we participate, unless you participate. Check out the day of action tomorrow against SOPA and the IP Protect Act. On Friday, we're going to occupy the courts. I'll be at the Supreme Court for the first hour of our show. And on Saturday, there's a national action, Occupy America. So don't forget, get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.